We're taking up an issue over here with regard to the idea of mitzvos. Now, this is a fundamental of Judaism, and each person has to be very clear about this. Because if a person makes a mistake about this point, then it can lead him into a form of heresy with regard to the nature of God. And the basic idea of the Torah is that all of the mitzvos are purely for man's benefit. Purely. And that, of course, Hashem derives no benefit whatsoever from the mitzvos that we do. And indeed, all of the mitzvos are as nothing to him. The Ramban quotes this. Now, it doesn't mean to say the way we that I have to use certain anthropomorphic terms. It doesn't mean that does God care. But when we say that God cares about something, it means that it's in line with the will of God. But we use those terms because a person can understand that. So it means that from the standpoint of God, it's significant if a person perfects himself or lives an animalistic life. But it's not because God derives any benefit from it. And this is a major theme. To say that God does not need us, God does not derive any benefit from our existence, to take that position that God somehow does is to make a fundamental mistake and to think about God, and you're going to project needs onto God. So then you're denying the whole idea of God's unity. And you're projecting some type of corporality onto God. So this is a terrible, terrible idea. Now the question arises, however, with regard to the idea of using. By the way, this is also in the Tefillah of Nila, that in if you'll do good, what do you give to God? That's incorporated into the Tefillah of Nila on Yom Kippur. Now I'm going to be reading, somebody suggested something in Hirsch, Rabbi Shimshon Farl Hirsch. So this is on Hirsch's commentary to the Chumash, chapter 6, Pasuk 7. It's the last paragraph, however. I'm not reading the entire commentary. Now, here you have a very anthropomorphic, he's commenting on a very anthropomorphic pasuk. Because the pasuk describes when God made the decision, so to speak, to destroy the world with the flood. So it does employ anthropomorphic terms. And Vayinochem Ad Hashem, that, well, you see, in the translation over here is interesting. Generally, you would translate it loosely as God regretted. That's the idea that's coming across, that he had created, that he had made man in the land. Vayisatzev, and now Vayisatzev rather. Atzvos is depressed. So it actually depicts God as grieving. He translated it, and he grieved at his heart. So that's attributing to God a certain type of a grieving. Okay, so you can't take that literally. Because what difference does it make? It doesn't affect God in any way. But it's communicating an idea to us. You gotta be very careful with these psukim. Now let me read the paragraph. This is the last paragraph on Hirsch's commentary. He says, regarding this and similar anthropomorphic expressions of God, we would like to make a general remark. For so long, people have philosophized all round these expressions to remove the danger of the slightest thought of any materiality or corporality of God, that at the end, one runs very nearly into the danger of losing all idea of the personality of God. Had this been the purpose of the Torah, those kind of expressions could easily have been avoided. But this last danger is greater than the first. The two anthropomorphic expressions here save the two essential conceptions. The freedom the free will of God and that of man. Not for nothing does it say, quote, when God saw, etc. The wickedness of man was not a matter of necessity. God had to see it before he knew it. This expression gives us the guarantee of human free will. And the fate that overtook mankind was not the result of physical causes which followed set laws. It was preceded by an examination by God and his decision. The decision itself pained the decider. All this presupposes the personality and free will of God and keeps this clear in our minds. The Raivat already, one of the most Jewish of our thinkers, is of the opinion that such consciousness of the personality of God is of much greater importance than speculating about it as to whether this or that can be asserted of God. It's important to remember that this was written in German and was translated from German, but I think the translator did a pretty good job. I'm not criticizing that. I don't know that I fully understand what he's saying. A few things that he said over here are troubling to me. I don't know what he's talking about. For example, when he uses the term personality of God. I don't know what that's. What do you mean by personality of God? I've never heard that expression before. A personality is very human kind of a thing, and that can only be posited of a corporeal being. Of course, there's a mix. Personality, you sort of like have a sense of the overall character of the person. Personality is not even character. It's the personality is persona. That's much more corporeal than say in character. Character you're talking about virtues generally, but in personality you're talking about persona, their friendliness, their sense of humor. You're bringing in a lot of emotional factors. I don't think that's what he means, but I don't know what you mean. What do you mean the personality of God?
We ask that question to the person.
In my opinion. And I say this with all due respect, I don't know exactly what Rabbi Hirsch meant. I'm not criticizing Rabbi Hirsch. But if somebody talks about the idea that we should have a certain sense of the personality of God, to me that's already a certain image. When you think about a friend or any individual that you've gotten to know, so you have an overall kind of sense of their personality. And that's sort of like an image in your mind. Once you're going to do that with regard to God, I mean, to me, that's the pathway of idolatry. You're making an image. In your mind, there's a certain image.
Maybe they just...
Of a certain type of a being. And already, it's dangerous because now you're going to be projecting qualities, synthesizing this, that. I mean, how do you... You can't even talk about these things. We talk about... We should emulate the ways of God. He's called. They're not even his ways. They're just like I'm called... Merciful, you be merciful. We're told to emulate attributes of actions. And in no way, shape, or form can we... If a person does that, they're doing it to comfort themselves. And already they're going to be saying, oh, I know God. I sort of know God. God would be happy with this. Or God would not be upset with that, etc., etc. That seems to me the pathway towards... an idolatrous approach. It's going to... One thing will lead to another. So for example, if a person has the idea of the personality of God, that God's a very forgiving kind of personality. So then, that aside from the fact that it's wrong, it also is harmful, because then a person will give himself permission to do certain things. Now, God, we say that God is compassionate. What we mean is that if we act... in a certain manner, that if we serve him, if we follow a certain path, if we sinned, if we did tshuva, if we did the right thing, we follow his Torah, then we have a right to believe and to hope and to pray that Hashem will be merciful to us. But that's not because of God's personality. Already by saying a personality, you're sort of saying that God, to the contrary, that God isn't free-willed. I don't get it. Then God just works because that's his personality. I see a dangerous comparison between God and man by the utilization of such terms. Another thing that's dangerous over here is, I'm not quite sure why he goes into it, but he's saying that the Torah depicts God as seeing the sins of man and then acting. Now, he wants to say that it does so to make the point that it wasn't inevitable, that man has free will. Well, we agree that man has free will. But then he says, the wickedness of man was not a matter of necessity. That's true. God had to see it before he knew it. That, I don't know what he means. Is he saying that God does not have knowledge? God's omniscience? I think Rabbi Hirsch held from that. I'm 100% sure. But that statement carries that implication, that God had to see it before he knew it. Why? God knew it. This expression gives us the guarantee of human free will. I don't see what the connection that the Torah has to resort to anthropomorphic expressions in order to give us the guarantee of human free will. I don't see that. Now, there's one more thing that he says, which I have a problem with. He says, and the fate that overtook mankind was not the result of physical causes that which followed set laws. It was preceded by an examination by God and his decision. Then he says, the decision itself pained the decider. Well, what does that mean? At face value, the decision, when he says the decision itself pained the decider, that statement in and of itself is, at face value, that statement is incorrect, not just incorrect, but a violation of the true idea of Hashem. What do you mean it pained God? The Sephorno, I believe, is the one who says, where it says, it'll be that just like when God in the Tochach, on the punishment, just like I rejoiced over you to do good to you and so on and so forth when you were keeping the Torah, so too I will rejoice to punish you and so on and so forth. Then uses the same expression. What do you mean God will rejoice? I think it's the Sephorno who says, to teach us that there's no change in God. That God acts in accordance with a system of perfect justice. And it all depends on you. But God is not diminished. God is not hurt because you didn't do the right thing. And that's a pasuk in the Torah, which is teaching us that idea. I'm not claiming that, again, I don't want to be in the position of criticizing Rabbi Hirsch. I'm just saying that I don't understand the words themselves. If it was anybody else, let's put it that way, I would say these statements are very bad. It could be I'm not getting it, so I'm leaving that open. But the statement itself, these three statements, are very, very problematical. And he concludes by saying, all this presupposes the personality and free will of God. And keeps this clear in our minds. What I find troublesome is the use of the term personality. And clearly, saying that God had to see it before he knew it, which carries the implication, anybody reading this can walk away with the idea that Rabbi Hirsch is maintaining that God does not know what man is going to do, because man has free will. That old conflict between God's foreknowledge and man's freedom, which the Rambam resolves in the Mishneh Torah. And I just don't understand this concept of the personality of God, which, at least at first glance, to me sounds very problematical. Could be that the statement that God had to see it before he knew it means that that's the depiction, that it's being depicted that way to indicate it was the sin of man that triggered the response. It's a good question what the purpose is. That is, when the Torah depicts God in a physical manner, anthropomorphically, or venting his anger, so to speak, against sinners, we have to philosophize about that. I don't think that, is that also part of the personality of God that he was supposed to maintain? What about that? Where does that fit in? We're sort of forming an image of God. I think that expression of personality of God is leading you to form a certain sense, a certain image of God. And I think that we maintain that God is unknowable. God is completely unknowable. Whatever we know is through revelation of what God has commanded us that we ought to do, and how we ought to mold our own personalities and so on and so forth. But of course, it's a good question. What is the purpose then of depicting God in that way? It's interesting. We should study that. I'm just giving a quick first impression over here. This is a tough one. This pasuk always struck me as being tough. When the Torah depicts God as punishing the sinners, then I'll make your, if you mistreat the orphan and so forth, then I'll make your children to orphans and things like that. My anger will flare against. So on the one hand, you have to realize that it's not the case. It's not the case. What it's really telling you is dire consequences, stated in a manner to frighten you. So it's sort of like, you have to maintain very, very careful. You have to maintain a dichotomy in your own mind between the knowledge that God is not actually angry, but the emotion it should evoke in you is one of a fear, dire consequences. That is important when you want to warn people. So that's why, in my opinion, it has to depict it that way. It's the message is not going to get through unless it's depicted in a certain way. It gets your attention. And so we have a certain sense of arousing divine anger, but the intelligent person, the philosopher, knows that it means to say that this is very, very serious. That these things should not be taken lightly. But at the same time, he has to realize that he's not getting God angry, literally. Because then he's losing his whole idea of God. With regard to something like this, it's a little bit more complex. This you don't find, this kind of thing, that, depicting God as though God were upset. But I think over here, I'm just, again, it's off the top of my head, it's communicating to, what's the idea that it's trying to communicate? What are we supposed to hear from this? He's saying that Rabbi Hirsch is saying that this was painful. I think you got to go one step further. It's as though it was painful. All of these anthropomorphic expressions, the Rambam has talked about it. Clearly, you should go back to the Rambam, where he says, it's as though, that is, if we were to see such a thing in a human ruler, we would describe it. It's talking about certain phenomena. If the, for example, God gets angry, means that this is a very, very serious violation and will bring down dire consequences, so we call that anger, because in a human situation, we'd attribute it to anger. That's the way you must approach every anthropomorphism. Except this one is a little bit more difficult. What does it mean? I think it means to say that we shouldn't take human existence lightly, that the seriousness, the significance of man's existence, of man's goodness, and the fact that man sins and men must be destroyed is a matter of, when we don't understand how, what, or when, but it's a matter of great significance to the Creator, as though he, if it were a human, he'd be very aggrieved. That is, the Torah didn't want you to think that God doesn't care, but it's care. Again, I'm using words, but I'm just trying to convey that we shouldn't have the sense that our existence is of no consequence either. That human existence is of no consequence. Okay, big deal. No good. Goodbye. Like a fly. You get rid of it. I that's my sense of why these types of terms, that the goodness of man and that man's achieving what he was intended to, is something which has great significance in the sight of the Creator, even though we don't understand why. But not, now, how do you depict that? you depict that if it was a parent who had to get rid of his child because the child kept provoking and sinning and so on and so forth, and finally the parent had to get rid of him. So this would be cause tremendous anguish. That's what I'm saying over here. It would be as though, in a human situation, something which would cause anguish. That is to say, a person needs to know that his existence is important in the sight of God, has importance. That's zichronos, the idea of zichronos, that it has importance. Not in the way something would be important to us, but in the way, in terms of God, God's will, which we really don't understand. So that, I think, is why this pasuk comes into the picture. That to just destroy the world and not make any comment on it, okay, like it didn't matter. The Torah wanted to convey that point, that it matters, so to speak, but not that he was pained. Yeah, I mean, you could, as though he were pained. That's what you got to put in over there, as though he were pained. But I think that there's a difference between what I'm saying and what's being suggested over here. I think there's a significant difference. And we have to avoid actually teaching that God was pained. I don't think you're allowed to teach that. Because people are going to... That's how people believe. That's what people believe. That the Christians always talk about this. The Christians talk about this. The Christians, those who... They really have a tremendous hatred for the Muslims. And they like their idea of God. They, you know, those Christians that are like evangelical and they want to believe in this Judeo-Christian, you know, thing. So they're closer to us. Well, originally they didn't like us because we believed in the so-called venge god of revenge. Whatever, that's all complete stupidity. But you know, their idea of God is not their, you know, the Muslim idea, not the loving God, that the compassionate God, etc. They have you know, they went very far with that idea of ascribing a personality. They actually made him into a person. That's where this kind of thing leads, in my opinion.